Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Improving Agency Court Collaboration Conference Call. At this time, all lines are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Ms. Mary O'Brien. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Mary O'Brien, and on behalf of the National Child Welfare Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, I want to welcome you to today's session on Improving Agency Court Collaboration, Strategies for Success. This call is co-sponsored with the National Child Welfare Resource Center on Legal and Judicial Issues. Our two national resource centers on organizational improvement and legal and judicial issues have worked together to organize this teleconference, and are also working together on an upcoming issue of Organizational Improvement's newsletter on this topic of child welfare court collaboration. I'm just going to start today with an overview of today's session and an introduction of who we have on the line, and then I'll go over some logistics before we begin. There are two things we're going to do in today's session. First, we want to let you hear from some sites that have had some success with collaboration. And then we're going to let you hear about the technical assistance services available from the National Resource Center on Legal and Judicial Issues. We thought it would be helpful to hear from two states that are at very different places in the collaborative process. We have one state with us that has a long history of strong collaboration. That would be Minnesota. And we have one state that has not had a long history of collaboration on the state level, but has made progress recently, and that would be North Carolina. We chose these two because they both have an interesting story about specific strategies and steps that they have used to bring agencies and courts together. We've asked all of our speakers to focus on telling us about how they built their collaborations, steps that they've taken, which might give other sites some ideas about strategies that you could use. Both of these states had reviews in the first year of the second round of the Child and Family Service review process, so they collaborated in that process, and we'll hear about that today. Both are also county-administered states, so in both cases, we have state-level presenters and people who will speak from a county level. From Minnesota, we have with us Judith Nord, who is the manager of the Court Improvement Project in Minnesota, which is called the Children's Justice Initiative in Minnesota, so her title is the Children's Justice Initiative Manager. She'll be joined by Larry Wojak, who's the Child and Family Service Review, the CFSR coordinator for the Minnesota Department of Human Services. On the local level in Minnesota, we have John Dinsmore, who's director of the Otter Tail County Human Services, and Brad Vold, who's a supervisor in child protection in Otter Tail County. From North Carolina, we have Patrick Betancourt, who's the Multiple Response System Coordinator and served as co-chair of the Court Involvement Work Group that developed the second round program improvement plan. He's with the North Carolina Division of Social Services. From the local level in North Carolina, we have Karen Butler, who's the Deputy Director for the Youth and Family Services Division in the Mecklenburg County Department of Social Services in North Carolina. And we also have Judge Louis Trosh on our agenda. Is he here yet, do you think? We'll see when we get to North Carolina if he's on the line. He wasn't when we started, but I think he's coming. great. So that's who we have from Minnesota and North Carolina. We also have with us Jennifer Rennie, who's the Assistant Director of the National Child Welfare Resource Center on Legal and Judicial Issues, and Timothy Travis, who's a consultant working with her. Jennifer and Timothy and I will work together to moderate this call. So I'm just going to go over a couple of logistics, and then I'll turn this over to Jennifer for her to say just a couple words before we begin with Minnesota. The handouts for this call today are posted on our website, the Organizational Improvements website. The link to that is in the email you got with the phone number for today's call. But I'm going to give it to you again now in case you're not the person who got the email or you want to look it up now or later. The website is www.nrcoi, as in National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement, www.nrcoi.org. Click on teleconferences and then scroll down, look for the date of today's call. Minnesota and North Carolina have provided some background documents that we've posted on that website. And we've also given you the link for the National Resource Center for Legal and Judicial Issues and to a number of useful documents on their website and to some other resources. We're particularly excited to provide a link there to the Child Welfare Information Gateway, which you can use to get a free copy of a very useful book put out by the Resource Center on Legal and Judicial Issues on this topic called How to Work with Your Court, A Guide for Child Welfare Agency Administrators. Our audience for today's call is large. We have a large number of people registered. We have lots of state and county child welfare agency folks on the line and people from courts and court improvement programs, and also from federal regional offices. So we expect to have at least 70 or 80 lines open. So the lines for participants are closed right now, just so we can all hear the speakers. But we really want this to be interactive. So please note any questions or comments that you have, and we'll open the lines periodically so you can speak up. We know people on the line, from both child welfare and courts, have a lot of experience with this topic. And we really urge any of you to share any advice or observations that you have about specific steps that you've taken that have helped build collaboration in your location. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer Rennie for just a brief time.
Thank you, Mary. This is Jennifer Rennie. I'm from the Resource Center on Legal and Judicial Issues. And I first want to, and she doesn't know I'm going to do this, but I really want to thank and acknowledge Mary. Mary O'Brien, who is a consultant with the Resource Center, one of our fellow resource centers on organizational improvement, has just done a terrific job along with our consultant, Timothy Travis. They've just spent untold numbers of hours putting this together in terms of designing content and coming up with a program that was really going to meet the needs of the multidisciplinary group that's on the call. So thank you to Mary. And thank you to Timothy, who I will give an opportunity to introduce himself in a minute. So our Resource Center on Legal and Judicial Issues is one of the federally funded resource centers. We're part of the broader TNTA network funded by the Children's Bureau. We're somewhat unique, our resource center, in that our primary customers are not the Child Welfare Agency, but the courts. So when I say the courts, that may be judges, that may be attorneys. Most of our work is coordinated through the court improvement projects, and I'm delighted that there are a number of CIP directors that are on the call today. We do some work directly with the Child Welfare Agency, but usually we'll do that in partnership with another resource center. And at the end of the call, when I talk about examples of some of our TNTA and I take questions from the group, I can give more specifics in terms of how all of that works. But as I said, our primary customers are the courts and the CIPs, although we do quite a bit of work with the agency. So we are wildly excited to have this opportunity. I always think these large teleconferences are a little bit funny because as someone who does a lot of public speaking and training, it's in a way so much easier to be up in front of a room and be able to see everybody. But I hope and trust that folks are paying attention and really will get the most out of what we've got to hear from Minnesota and North Carolina. And as Mary said, please jot your questions down so that when the time for question comes around, we'll open up the lines and take those. Before I turn it over to Minnesota and Judy Nord, I did want to give Timothy Travis an opportunity to introduce himself.
Well, thank you, Jen. This is Timothy Travis, and just for those of you who don't know me, I'm a former CIP director from the state of Oregon. I have a lot of experience working with the agency through the court, and I really want to thank Mary for this opportunity. I think the two of us have modeled court and agency collaboration, and a pleasure.
Thank you, Timothy. Anything else, Mary, before I turn it over to Judy?
I think that's great. No.
Okay. Terrific. And I'm sorry, Judy. So folks have gotten Judy's title, which is the Children's Justice Initiative, which is the same thing as the Court Improvement Project. Some states have named them differently, and really has just done a stellar job in Minnesota. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Judy.
Thanks, Jen. Actually, we're going to have Larry start, Larry Wojak, start with the Minnesota information regarding our collaboration concerning the CSR. So, Larry, why don't you start?
Okay. I guess my piece today is to talk about how we worked with the courts, the child welfare, county and state level, worked with the courts to work collaboratively throughout the CFSR process. I know we only got 20 minutes, so I'm going to make my comments fairly brief because I think the actual specifics Judy's going to go into as to kind of the how-tos as far as the working together into program improvement areas. But to me, I want to underscore that I don't think in Minnesota that the work that we've done is, you can boil it down or limit it down to strategies. I think it's really hinged on several years of committed individuals working at all levels of our system, both child welfare and the court systems, to create an environment of mutual trust and respect. The CFSR process added some additional evaluative and qualitative improvement planning pieces, which complemented our existing child welfare, you know, court service efforts to improve the experience of children and families involved in our system. So I can't kind of say that enough, that this is a process that's been gone on before and will go on after the CFSR. In 2001, we had our first CFSR. We were, I think, the fourth state reviewed. In 2007, I believe we were like the 13th or something like that. The collaboration level between, or the involvement of the courts in the CFSR process increased considerably between the first and second reviews. And a large part, I think, goes credit to Judy Nord, because I think she's advocated for that right after the first review, that this is more of a team process, and to, you know, fully benefit, but we all have to be involved in it. In our second review, what we did is, in our statewide assessment, we try to involve the courts in all aspects. I'm just going to make a comments about the statewide assessment, the on-site, and the program improvement plan, just to sort of underscore that. The statewide assessment team we have is about 50 people, and we had several district judges, we had county attorneys, we had public defenders, guardian ad litems, and we had our state CJA staff, Judy Nord and Ann Alstrom, participating in the entire statewide assessment process. You know, along with other community folks, and I said as a group of 50, we really sat down and hashed through the data, took a look at the federal and the state child safety and permanency data, tried to understand what that meant from all our different vantage points, and examined the actual child welfare practices and court practices, and to look at what we were doing and what we wanted to be doing in the future. On-site review, same folks that were involved in the statewide assessment either were peer reviewers or participated in state or site community stakeholder interviews. The PIP advisory team, we used the same model, again, about 50 people. Again, pulled people together from all aspects of child welfare in the courts. And these same folks, these same court folks were involved in our PIP development also. But really bringing everyone along together, some key people throughout all phases of the CFSR really provided us with some good continuity, kind of some on-the-job training. Everybody kind of understood the CFSR really well by the end of it, and when we sat down to do our PIP, we had a good wealth of knowledge and on-the-job experience. Again, I'm going to let Judy go into the details and how we develop some primary collaborative PIP strategies. But I want to kind of make the point that effective collaboration is built on strong, established relationships. And I think we've done a really good job in Minnesota in creating these relationships over the years and attending to them. So we can make these systemic and practice changes because we had all parties involved and sitting at the table, and we had ways to communicate and talk about it after the plans were put in place. So I think that's about really all I have to say, and I think I'll turn it over to Judy at this time.
Great. Thanks, Larry. As Jen and Mary and Larry mentioned, my name is Judy Nord, and I'm a staff attorney with the State Court Administrator's Office in St. Paul. And as Larry mentioned, we've had a longstanding, strong working relationship between the Minnesota Supreme Court and the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And by longstanding, I mean we've started working together back in 1998. So it's been going on 10 or 11 years now. What I want to talk about is two or three different things about how we've actually worked together. But before I do that, what I wanted to say is the reason that we've decided that it's important to work together is we all recognize and realize that we're all focusing on the same thing here. It's the safety and permanency of being of children and improved outcomes for the children and their families. The courts have that goal. The agencies have that goal. So it didn't seem to make any sense to not work together. So with that in mind, the way that we've kind of come about doing this is by creating what we call our Children's Justice Initiative teams. We had a bit of a unique circumstance in that the person who envisioned this was our former Chief Justice, who happened to have a background as a licensed child protection social worker. She then became a legislator and rewrote all of our legislation regarding child protection. She then became a trial court judge in the juvenile court of our largest city, and then eventually was appointed to the Supreme Court as our Chief Justice. So I think that's an amazing background for our Chief Justice, and her passion for children showed. But even in those states where they might not have a Chief Justice who knows about children's issues, there's a couple of different ways that you could maybe work with them. What we did in Minnesota was we have 87 counties in our state, and those counties are divided into 10 judicial districts. In order to start this process, we identified one county in each of our 10 judicial districts where the judges, and we started with the judges, already had a passion for this topic. And as you may know, in some of your states, not all judges like working in the area of family law or juvenile law. So for us, it was key to find judges who already had a passion for children's issues. We brought them, the first 10, actually it turned out to be 12 judges together, to talk about child protection issues and what we as a state could do differently. Our second step was then to bring those judges back to the Twin Cities along with their agency director. And this is where it got to be a little interesting because there were a number of judges who didn't know there was such a person as an agency director. There were others who knew there was an agency director but had never met them. And there were others who knew that there was an agency director and were actually working well with them already. So we had a variety of circumstances. And so, first of all, it was bringing them together to start building a relationship because that's key to all of this. Understanding each other's roles and working together. So we brought the judges and the directors together, and I'm not going to go into the details about what we discussed because all of that is included in the implementation guide that I developed that is out, included with the materials for this presentation today. It's step-by-step, including all the agenda and everything that we did along the way. The second step was then asking the judges and the agency directors to go back to their respective counties and identify a multidisciplinary team for that county. And we asked them to please include other judges as well as child protection workers, guardians ad litem or CASAs, court administrators, attorneys for parents and children, social workers, law enforcement, foster care. And again, I won't go through the laundry list because that's included in the materials that I put together. But we asked them to put together this team and then get together for an initial meeting not to talk about child protection cases and not to talk about problems that they saw because we can all do that. We know what they are. But instead, talk about each other's roles and get to know each other. We gave each team about $200 so they could buy some pizza. Because I'm guessing Minnesota's like other states where food is always a good thing. And if you've got food and maybe a cup of coffee or some pop or soda, that helps the conversation. So we asked the teams to get together for a couple of meetings, and then we brought all the teams together in one venue in the Twin Cities for a two-day conference where we had a motivational speaker to help remind us why we're doing this. And again, it's all about the kids and families. We then brought in a judge from Chicago, Nancy Salyers, who completely overhauled the Cook County Child Protection Court system and their processes, and she talked to us about how these improvements can help children and families, so kind of the what's in it for me piece of it. And then we had each of the teams break out and start talking about a number of best practices. My colleague and I put together a best practices manual listing all the various practices that we thought we should be doing in Minnesota. And initially it was going to be a couple of pages long. It turned out to be 17 pages long. But we asked the counties to start working on that so that they at each county could identify things they were doing well and things they needed to work on. That process then was repeated several different times across the state so that within about 2 years, every single county in the state of Minnesota now has a multidisciplinary team led by the judge, and in some cases the agency director is the co-leader, working on child protection issues. Beyond that, there were two other things that we have done at the state level. We do a lot of training together. Much of the training for the courts and the agencies is done together. For example, when we do training regarding child development, it's not just for the social workers. It's for the judges and the guardians and the attorneys and the court administrators, because everybody needs to know about child development issues. The same thing for changes in statutes or rules. We work together on all of those issues. We also work together on stakeholder-specific training, and what I mean by that is sometimes there's information that just judges need to know. For example, what findings they need to make regarding reasonable or active efforts. Now, attorneys and others need to know that, but judges really need to know that. So we work together to put together those types of trainings. The second thing that we have done together is we've created a number of tools on our Children's Justice Initiative website, which is in the materials that are out on the website for this training, is a link to something that's called our Alcohol and Other Drug Toolkit. We had a multidisciplinary group of people who met together for quite a period of time, did research on what's important for families going through the court process where there is alcohol and other drugs as a challenge or mental health issues as a challenge. And so there's a list of things that counties can look at or tools they can use to work with families in those instances. And then the last thing, one of the last things that we've done is as part of this Children and Family Services reviews, as Larry mentioned, the courts have been involved significantly in that. And after we received the results of our second round, we realized that we didn't do quite as well as we wanted to, and I'm sure that's true for other states. But then we had to figure out, well, what do we do with that? How do we make sure that we start to make the improvements that are necessary? We knew that it couldn't be just the child protection agencies that bore this responsibility, because it isn't just theirs. It belongs also to the courts. So the first thing we did is we went to our judicial council, which is the policymaking body for the entire court system in Minnesota, and we asked them to adopt a policy that says that the judges in Minnesota share responsibility for the federal child welfare data and for our state child welfare data. To be honest with you, I'm still kind of amazed that it actually happened, but our judicial council said, absolutely, we do share responsibility. So you will see the policy out on the website. You'll see the policy that our judicial council passed. Once that was passed, then Larry and I and others from our respective agencies and courts got together and put together a training that talked about our CFSR data and what it meant, because it's a little hard to decipher, and then what it meant for each of the counties. We drilled down and gave each county their county-specific data and ask the counties to start looking at their data and finding ways to make improvements. There's a ton more stuff that we could go into, but our piece of this time is up. What I wanted to say next is that the collaboration is not just at the state level. At every county level, judges, social workers, guardians ad litem, attorneys are working together in a variety of ways. Otter Tail County, which is in western Minnesota, and more of a rural county, is one very strong example of how the Children's Justice Initiative process is alive and well. So I'll turn it over to John Dinsmore and Brad Vold, who can talk about an example of their collaborative efforts.
Thank you, Judy, and everyone. This is John Dinsmore, Director of Otter Tail County Human Services, and I'm here with my colleague, Brad Vold, who is the Managing Supervisor of Child Protection Services. We decided to divvy up our 10 minutes by me giving a brief introduction, and Brad will kick me in the shins if it's not brief. Brad will give you an overview of our background and the history of our Children's Justice Initiative, and then I'll make some overview comments at the end. As Judy mentioned, we're in West Central Minnesota, a county of almost 60,000 people, and I appreciated the comments that were made earlier because so much of what's made a difference with all of these initiatives is to have strong judicial leadership as well as leadership from our agency. Just to tell, also to remind everyone of all of our 50 states, we're one of the unique states in Minnesota where we have what is called a state-supervised, county-administered human services system. And so it's been quite remarkable and very effective for our, we're really an extension of our executive branch to work closely with the judicial branch. On that note, I'll turn it over to Brad and give you some more background.
Thank you, John. Again, my name is Brad Vold, and I supervise Child Protection Services here in Otter Tail County. Just a little bit more background about Otter Tail. We are quite vast. We're about 80 miles wide, 60 miles high. As John said, about 58,000 people. We have 8 school districts. About 13,000 kids live in Otter Tail County. Our Children's Justice Initiative began in early 2001, and we were one of the first CJI counties. We tried to blaze the path, as they say. And the judicial leadership and the director of our agency both were very instrumental in the development of our CJI and getting the buy-in from stakeholders. We had good response from all stakeholders in terms of participating in the Children's Justice Initiative, from the social workers to the guardian ad litems to the service providers to supervisors, directors, the judge. We all came together. We started doing a strengths, needs, frustration, and pats on the back spreadsheet regarding our system, so we all educated each other on the jobs that we do. I think it was very beneficial. Even though we're all involved in the system, we generally were only involved in our piece of the system, so we all had to get on the same page relative to what our positions were. And we also got buy-in from our county board. We, along with the judicial branch, went to the county board, let them know what we were doing, and got their buy-in and support in this process. So after we got to learn our positions, learn our jobs, we then started to focus on what do we want to do from our county perspective to help improve the judicial system and the work that we do with kids. So we decided to build a best practices manual. And we did do that. We developed and implemented our first best practices manual using a consistent format. All the best practices are written in similar formats with the rules, laws, statutes that affect them. It begins from the time we place a child to the end of the court process. And we talk about the EPC hearings, the admit denies, the development of case plans, working with guardian ad litems. There's about 25 to 30 best practices that we have developed. We developed small work groups to develop each of the best practices, brought them back to the big group, and got feedback on them. And a lot of it included social services types of activities. So a lot of it revolved around the work that the agency did working with the court system, and social workers were in on it and had some buy-in as well and helped develop some of these. We put them all into writing, and then it took about a year to complete. After we completed it, we had a countywide training, which included law enforcement, social services, the judicial branch, court administration, county attorney's office, pro-service providers, schools. We invited anybody that we could think of that might be touched by the courts when it came to working with kids. And we had actually quite a good turnout. I was going to pull out the numbers. I can't recall, but it was in the hundreds that we had in terms of the people who came to the training. Then about 2 years ago, we developed the second edition. So we, as we most of us know, laws change relative to the work that we do. And so we developed a second edition. And then we had another training with the second edition. And so we're playing with it. We're using our second edition now. It's working well. In terms of how we use our best practices manual, all the social workers, when they come into the agency, are given a copy. They look through it. They read it. It's part of our training materials when we hire social workers. I will have to say that it was, you know, this process, Children's Justice Initiative and the Court Improvement Project have been time-consuming. However, it is well worth it. As we know, in child protection, the courts are instrumental in the work that we do. And they can have a significant impact on our children, on our kids, on our placements, on the work that we do. Public defenders bought in early on, the court system. So it has been time-consuming but well worth it in terms of getting all the stakeholders on the same page. In terms of just other brief comments in terms of outcomes, you know, I think we have seen improved outcomes. I'm not going to get into data, but I think, you know, the social workers feel better about the system in terms of the courts and the judges knowing more about the work that they do and how it gets done. And so I just would, again, like to say that it has been a worthwhile project, and it is a very useful manual in terms of putting the social workers and the system all on the same page in the work that we do. With that, I'm a little bit over my time, so I'm going to turn it over to John again, and he's going to have a few more comments.
I'll just come back in the last few minutes remaining. Of all the information that's out there on the website, and I believe that Mary and Jennifer referred to it at the beginning, I would refer you to, under the Minnesota handouts, the Implementation Guide Children's Justice Initiative. And there's a series of appendices in there, and Appendix E is one I'd refer you to. It's about 14 pages long. It's called the Best Practices County Practice Guide. It really served us well when we developed our Best Practices Manual. We actually went through that fairly methodically to develop our Best Practices Manual. So I refer you to that long after we've hung up the phone, and you may not remember what we've said. You can look to that as a written guide. A few other comments. In the 8-plus years that we've been doing this, I think that the benefits of this collaboration between us and the executive administrative role and the judicial role has gone far beyond their Children's Justice Initiative. What we've also seen happen in this county is we've seen the development and expansion of something that we call collaboratives. We have a lot more school-based services and truancy prevention and truancy coordination. We more recently have developed two specialty drug courts. When in Minnesota, because of budget challenges, there was cutbacks to the funding for public defenders, a lot of the counties and the judicial branch got together to figure out how we could provide funding for public defenders for our families, our low-income families in need of representation. And I say that all by a way of relaying this. The fact that we got together back in 2001, rolled up our sleeves with Judge Senek, other judges, and all the other stakeholders mentioned by Judy at the outset, we got to know each other. When all was said and done, by getting to know each other, I think made such a big difference, and it opened up the doors for us to collaborate in other ways that we may not have done if we hadn't done such hard work and good work in Children's Justice Initiative. So again, I think it's something that has to be a grassroots effort. You really have to have a committed judge, and we have in Judge Senek here. Having said that as well, at the top end, it made such a big difference, as Judy Nord said at the outset, that when Kathleen Blatz, our former Supreme Court Chief Justice, and our commissioner at the time of Department of Human Services, they were a good team, and they were good role models for all of us. And on that note, I'll pass it back. Thanks.
That's great. Thank you. This is Mary O'Brien. Maybe I will say that since we've heard from Minnesota, thank you so much for sharing that from both the state level and the local level. That's a lot of great ideas. Matt, why don't we see if we can open up the lines, see if we can take a couple of comments, observations, or questions from people who are on the line.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question or leave a comment at this time, please press the 1 key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key. Our first question comes from Kathleen Holt from Cimarron, Kansas.
I wonder if in the training that you did where you had both people from the legal system and the child welfare system, did you provide both continuing legal continuing ed legal credits and continuing, you know what I mean, CEUs and CLEs both?
Yes, this is Brad Voltagen from Otter Tail County. Yes, both in our local training we did garner continuing education credits for social workers, post credits for law enforcement, and continuing legal credits for attorneys. We had in our training committee one a person from each of the professions talk with their organizations. I believe we also had it for public health nurses, medical professionals, so I think we covered the gamut in the first training. The second training, we did not do that, but the first training, when we put together the manual and shared it with everybody, we wanted to make sure we got continuing ed credits for all the professions so that would get some buy-in and hopefully they would be able to make it.
Okay. Thank you.
This is Judy. For all the trainings that we do at the state level, we always try to do a number of incentives to make sure that we get the largest possible audience, and that includes making sure we have continuing education credits for judges, social workers, guardians ad litem, attorneys, law enforcement, and everyone else. We'll also sometimes have other incentives there. For example, almost every training we do is free. And that includes we pay for all the materials using our court improvement funds. We pay for breaks and lunches and things like that. And the reason that we do that is because we're trying to make juvenile court and child protection cases the place to be, because they're not right now, frankly. Many judges and others don't really want to handle these cases, and we're trying to change the way people think about these cases, and one way to do that is incentives.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key at this time. I'm currently showing no further questions.
Great. Okay, Matt. This is Mary O'Brien. Why? Maybe I'll just do one thing. Judy, maybe you could tell us about either you or Brad and John at the local level, any observations you have on strategies you use to overcome sort of barriers. Have told us about how that the process got harder. You know, you started with the judges who were interested, and later on, the judges who weren't as interested, it was a little harder. So I'd like you to just tell us a little bit about strategies you use to overcome some barriers. You had mentioned to me the idea of, pointing to the judicial codes, and I just don't know if you can mention that.
Yep, I'd be happy to talk about that. There were a couple of challenges that we ran into as we started to work with some of our judges. Some of our judges had concerns about participating in, or more importantly, leading a group of folks who regularly appear before the judge in court. There were concerns about ethical concerns. And so we talked about two things. First of all, what we suggested is that these multidisciplinary meetings are not to talk about specific cases. In fact, we specifically discourage teams from doing that. And that's because not everybody's present at these meetings, and so it would be considered ex parte communication. The second thing that we talked about for our judges that continue to have concerns is that in the Federal Code of Judicial Conduct and our specific Minnesota Code of Judicial Conduct, there is a reference in there to the fact that one of the responsibilities of judges is to help improve the court procedures. And that's what these Children's Justice Initiative teams are all about, is looking at what the existing procedures are and finding ways to improve them. And I'll give you one concrete example. The best practice guide that we put together and that John referenced, which is part of our implementation manual, it includes information or questions or issues for teams to think about, for example, regarding hearings. In Minnesota, we have the emergency hearing, which must take place within the first 72 hours of a child's removal. And then once there's a disposition, we have hearings at least every 90 days. And many of our counties are actually moving towards having hearings every 30 or 60 days because we recognize that it's helpful to have more frequent hearings. Well, the best practice guide talks about the different things that should be happening at those hearings. And so that's what these teams talk about is what are they doing now and what are they not doing and how can they improve it. So that was one hurdle. Then the other hurdle that we've overcome is when we started with the first 12 counties, that was very purposeful. We started with judges who were already passionate about this topic because our thought process was that if we start with these judges, they can build the momentum to then work with their colleagues across the state to get them to understand how important this was. Now, I've worked with most of our judges in the state for many, many years and get along with all of them. I'm happy to say that. But it's always better to have judge-to-judge contact and judge-to-judge communication as opposed to me coming from the state court administrator's office. So we use those judges, our first 12 judges, to carry that message to their colleagues. And if there's time a little bit later on, we can share a few more of those strategies and the challenges and how we overcame them.
Great. Thank you, Judy. That's great. This is Mary O'Brien. I think what we should probably do is move on and hear from North Carolina, the folks from North Carolina, and then we'll have another time where we'll open the lines and have some more discussion. Does that sound okay, Jennifer?
Sure does.
Yeah. Okay, great. So let's. What we'll do is we'll turn this over to the folks from North Carolina. We're going to hear first from the state level and then from the county level. So, Patrick Betancourt, I'm going to call on you to talk about some of the strategies that were used on the state level to improve agency-court collaboration in North Carolina.
That sounds great. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, folks. I just want to start off by telling you that you're probably going to hear a number of similarities between the collaboration of child welfare and our court system in North Carolina, similar to those that you heard in Minnesota. It sounds like that we are on similar pages with some of the strategies that we are using. Just by way of reference, North Carolina has a population of about 9 million folks with about 2.3 million children, and at the end of February of 2009, we had somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10,000 children in care. We are also a county-administered system that has a differential response process, and it's modeled after Minnesota, so we thank you guys for blazing that trail for us. As Mary mentioned at the beginning, in March of 2007, North Carolina went through its second round of federal CFSR. We were the second state to be reviewed both in 2001 and 2007. During that process, like Minnesota, we included a number of folks associated with our North Carolina courts in our statewide assessment as well as the on-site review process and our subsequent program improvement plan development. We began that by making collaboration a program improvement plan priority by developing the plan and structuring it in such a way that we had five primary themes, and one of those themes was court involvement. Those themes came about as a result of direct outcomes from the Federal Child and Family Services Review. So the themed work groups for the court involvement piece was actually co-facilitated by myself with the Child Welfare Agency and with a court improvement project manager. So that was one of the ways that we begun the collaboration piece, was to ensure that both child welfare and courts were represented at this work group. We did our best to include a diverse representation, whether it was child welfare staff, clerks of courts, respondents, attorneys, judges, guardian ad litem, and we also really tried to specifically capture folks both from our urban areas as well as the rural parts of North Carolina. The co-facilitators, myself and the court improvement project manager, met outside of these work groups on a regular basis to develop the agendas, reconcile any kind of differences that we came up with during the meetings, and assured the inclusion of all necessary parties. One of the things that we focused on specifically was maintaining our look towards the outcomes of the CS, the CFSR as a guidepost to help us develop any corrective action steps. We did things like review issues such as automation systems that the court system was working on. We reviewed our data on a regular basis. We provided feedback that we had received from youth focus groups into the meetings so that folks could always focus back on what it was that we were looking towards. Rather than getting entrenched in what the differences between the systems, we really tried to refocus and maintain our outlook towards what our outcomes should be. And again, we reviewed on a regular basis what the findings of the Child and Family Services review were and what our data indicated. We developed a let me back up and say that one of the things that did come up is we heard loud and clear that there was a recurring issue of respect from a number of different individuals. We heard it from the respondents' attorneys. We heard it from the judges. We heard it from the child welfare workers. And what we know is that each of them felt that it was really important to honor or to give the respect that each of the professions was due, and so we really tried to incorporate that in any of the written products that came about as a result of these meetings. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to how we developed our court policy. One of the things that we also endeavored to accomplish was we developed a state-level memorandum of understanding that provides a backdrop for the development of local-level memorandums of agreement. Those memorandums have involvement with agencies, judges, guardian ad litem, all the key players that were a part of that Child and Family Services review process. We also asked them to enter into these local memorandums of agreement and gave each of the county departments of social services in North Carolina sort of a step-by-step instruction sheet on how to go about developing these MOAs. Within the MOA, we suggested different folks to include and asked them to strive to include those individuals in that MOA. We also developed a court chapter for county child welfare staff that consolidated our court issues into one centralized policy. It comes complete with an abridged glossary and, again, that strong emphasis on collaboration. What we found when we reviewed our child welfare policy is that it sort of was scattered throughout different parts of our – the court pieces were scattered throughout different parts of our child welfare policy. And so in order to make it as easy as possible for not just the child welfare folks to find and to work from, but also court personnel to find and work through, we consolidated it into one area and recognized that while the court process can be, on its surface, sort of an adversarial process, we really structure or really stressed the need to have agencies understand that that needs to be a collaborative process so that it can move as smoothly as possible. I'll back up and say that as we were going through our program improvement plan, we did try to, like Minnesota did, we did try to involve as many stakeholders from the court as we could in not just our statewide assessment, but the on-site review process as well. And I guess I'll just kind of finish up by saying that, like Minnesota, many of the trainings that we have that involve issues around the court and child welfare, we also open up our training venues to judges, attorneys, guardian ad litem, again, trying to develop that collaboration as much as possible as we can with our court partners. And with that, I think what I'll do is just turn it over to Karen Butler and hopefully Judge Trosh, who is at the local level.
Thank you, Patrick. This is Karen Butler, and I don't think that Judge Trosh has joined us yet, so I will go ahead and speak for the local level here in North Carolina. I am with Mecklenburg County, and just to give some perspective to the numbers that Patrick gave out, we're the largest county out of 100 counties here in North Carolina, so when it comes to the CFSR, we're always in it, so, and we probably will be in the next round, even though we are running neck and neck with Wake County. For them to be the largest county, we probably won't win that race. But some perspective in terms of the 10,000 kids that are in care in the state, Mecklenburg County, a couple of years ago in January of 2007, we had more than 1,200 kids in care for our county, and we now have about 970 kids in care here in Mecklenburg County. Larry Wolczak, I think it was, in Minnesota, said something about collaboration, strong collaboration being built on strong relationships, and I just want to echo that. Here in Mecklenburg County, we've done a lot to develop those strong relationships, and a lot of work has been put into that, starting way back before the 2001 CFSR, continued to the 2007 one, and continues today. We like to maintain those relationships in between each audit. Some of the things that we have done, we collaborate like no other jurisdiction, I think. We have several joint initiatives between our child welfare agency and the court system, as well as some collaborations between other agencies in the system that touch the court, such as our Department of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention and our GAL's office. We've done a lot of work to educate not only just the judges, but all of those partners that may enter the courtroom on behalf of the children in care on our CFSR outcomes. We've shared data. We've educated on the benchmarks and the measures, and some of our judges know the CFSR measures better than some of our newer staff. So a lot of work around education, and then a lot of work in terms of opening the lines of communication between the judges and us in the child welfare system. We have judges who are so comfortable with our staff and with us that when an issue arises, they may just reach out directly to the social work supervisor. If they witness something in court or if they hear something in court or something comes out in a case, they just go straight to the source, and we're comfortable with that. They're comfortable with that. So there's a lot of, I guess the word may be intimacy between the two agencies, and a lot of comfort between the two agencies where and the relationship is very much reciprocal. We will also, in turn, call our judges if there's an issue that we hear about that happens in the courtroom. In terms of education on our outcomes and our benchmarks, just an example, if there was an issue with the time that it takes to process a case that has a goal of adoption, we've done a lot of work with engaging the judges as well as the clerk of courts. And we will call a meeting with the clerk of courts, and we've been very good at owning what our parts of what our pieces of the responsibilities are. So if there's an issue that only the clerk of courts can fix, they own that responsibility, and we have engaged the relationships and massaged the relationships enough that they'll take it, own it, correct it. If there's an issue on the part of our adoptions workers, then we own it. We take it and correct the problem on our end. But the point being that the communication has developed to the point that we can do that. We can call those meetings when issues arise instead of waiting a few months to the next committee meeting where judges and our staff may be. We do things at the point in time. We don't wait for the next committee meeting, although we have several committee meetings where we share membership with the judges. And some of the committees on the surface, if you hear what some of them are, may sound a little bit repetitious, but they actually all have their own purpose. And part of that being because of who the participants of the meetings are. There are several meetings where we're there with the judges, but then there's one meeting called the Children's Alliance that also, that has us at the table, the judges at the table, GAL, juvenile justice, but that committee meeting also has private nonprofit agencies in the community, foster care agencies, et cetera, that work collaboratively with us at the table. Then there's another meeting, the Juvenile Justice Partnership, that is just a more of a systems committee. So if an issue comes out with the community nonprofit providers, we then have another vehicle or another committee whereby we could come back together as a system, talk those issues out, and talk about how, and decision makers are at the table. These are agency directors and judges and things like that, where we can talk about a plan by which to fix what we heard at the community agency and work on it there. So some of these committees, like I said, may seem a little repetitious, but there's a rhyme and a reason to why we meet so often together with different people at the table. So those are some of the things that we've done on a local level. We do a lot of ongoing maintenance between audits in terms of joint trainings. And as I mentioned, we like to not only educate and collaborate with the actual judges themselves, but other agencies and partners that touch our kids in the courtroom as well. We found that to be a great benefit. We do some joint trainings with the GAL's office. We do them with DJJ and our area mental health. Those are our three biggies that we partner with the most, and those are the agencies that we meet the most in the courtroom. So that has been extremely helpful in not just educating just the judges, but anybody who it's been helpful to our outcomes and measures to let anybody who is working toward the goal of the child's case know what we're up against and what we're being measured on. So that's some of the things that we've done on a local level. I'll stop there and check time and let Mary check me on time.
That's great, Karen. This is Mary O'Brien. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great to hear from both the state level and the local level in North Carolina. And let me say, why don't we, Matt, why don't we see if we can open the lines and see if people have comments or questions?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key at this time.
Great. And I'll just say that the memorandum of understanding that Patrick mentioned was developed on the state level. That's on our website. It's one of the handouts for this call. He also mentioned that they've developed a MOA sort of template that can be used by counties and also a sort of a procedures guide for sort of how to go about developing those on the county level. And those are also available from North Carolina if people are interested in those. Matt, do we have any comments or questions on the line?
We have a question from Leslie Sigmund from Oakton, Virginia.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm sorry. This is actually Phyllis Charles with Child Welfare Information Gateway. I was wondering for Karen, you talked about how if there's issues between court.
I'm listening for an hour.
I'm sorry?
Hello?
Yes?
Maybe Matt can mute that line.
No, don't.
Oh, but I'm just wondering the example of how court clerks, what were some of the issues between like court clerks or social workers and how they were resolved? You talked about working with them.
It was just movement of paperwork, and we just educated them on what our timelines were and what we were up against in terms of processing. You know, the transfer, we could do our part all we wanted, but if it wasn't moved in the court's office, then of course we weren't going to meet our timelines for our benchmarks. So it was more around movement of the paperwork and them understanding that was really important for them to move the paperwork. And on our part, if there was a stall in the process on their part. It could have been something like the paperwork wasn't complete or there was an error on the paperwork. There was an education on our side with our adoptions folks to, we now have three levels of approval before our paperwork leaves our agency and goes over to the clerk of courts, just to make sure different sets of eyes are on it, to make sure it's absolutely, positively perfect and accurate. Stuff like that.
And you, this is Mary O'Brien. You resolve some of those issues by just meeting together and working out the processes?
That was it. We just met together, and like I said, just educating them on what our timelines were and why they were important. It was not just enough to say we need this done, you know, in 30 days or whatever the case may be, but why it was important and what the stakes were if those timelines weren't met.
Right. This is Mary O'Brien. I would just comment that and just urge everyone, you know, to this conversation is making me think of this book on that I mentioned as the free resource available through the Gateway on how to work with your courts. And it's a really, really practical, helpful book that talks about, you know, how to do meetings between child welfare and courts and how to do collaborative projects and gives very specific sort of tips for success in that project, in that process. And it's often things like being very specific, like on something like this paperwork issue, what it is that you need, why it's needed, and, you know, to be very, they're being very concrete is one of the suggestions. It also suggests the idea of things people have talked about you know, treating one another with respect and communicating a lot, and also owning responsibility for your part in the system. So it suggests that when child welfare people approach courts with issues, that you could also think about what could you do in this process to make it easier for the courts? What do they need? So it's very, I really highly recommend it. And it, a lot of what is in there is reflected by what Karen's been sharing about the sort of productive meetings they've been managing to have in Mecklenburg County.
Right. And I don't mean to make it sound like it was just easy as a couple of meetings. It took a while for those relationships to be built and those communications to happen.
Right.
Am I actually on the line?
Who's this?
This is Judge Trosh. I've been here for an hour, but I was a listener, so I couldn't answer or speak, and I had to call myself anyway. I'm on now.
Oh, we're so sorry. Yes, you know, the presenter lines are open, and you know, that's the number you should have had, Judge Trosh. I'm sorry, and so we apologize. If you'd like to speak for a few minutes, that would be great.
I apologize. I was trying to answer earlier, and then I realized you all didn't have me on the line as a speaker. So it was me, I think, the line that you said to mute because I had called my cell phone to get through. But to echo some of the things that Karen said, I came on the bench in 1999, and at that time we had in Mecklenburg County probably what I would refer to as more of the silo approach, where the court did their thing and we notified the Department of Social Services and other agencies what was going on when they set foot in the courtroom, and we'd say, well, no, we changed the procedures. We're doing it this way now. And similarly, when they changed their procedures, they notified us when things would happen differently in the actual courtroom or in a case. Around that time, we became a model court with the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges.
Mm-hmm.
And from a court perspective, one of the things that did is we were required to start a committee. Karen talked about we now have a lot of committees, but we started a committee back in 98, 99 called the Model Courts Committee. And it's taken years, as Karen just said a minute ago, for us to get from the point where we didn't communicate very much at all to the point now where when we're hiring someone new here for the courthouse or the department's hiring a new director for Youth and Family Services or Area Mental Health is hiring someone new, we actually participate on each other's search teams. We work that well together.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's all about relationships. And again, that's been said both from Minnesota and again in North Carolina, but that point can't be emphasized enough. A quick story, when I started, I think to get the ball rolling, we focused on one specific project that we agree would be beneficial to both the department and the court system. And that was bringing mediation to juvenile cases, juvenile abuse and neglect cases. And so we set up a subcommittee from our larger model courts committee to put that one specific project together. That one specific, the success that we then had from that one specific project, working together to figure out how it was a win-win situation for everybody, led to us having, I think, the realization or the light bulb went off where we all realized, wow, we can actually work together in a way that's not competitive, not us against you, but that everyone can gain from the experience. And so we build on that, and then with the first reviews, federal reviews, we worked together back in 2001, and even more so since that time for the second review that just happened last year. So I think that it's a process that I would commend jurisdictions to look at honestly. Where are you now? If you're in a place where, and I think someone from Minnesota said this earlier, where judges don't even know that the agency directors exist or what their names are, then you've got to start small with maybe one small project or getting together for lunch or one to talk across the table about common interest. But as you move forward, you can build on those successes. I would commend another publication to you all, and it's called Building a Better Collaboration, Facilitating Change in the Court and Child Welfare System, and that was put out in 2004 by the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges. We participated in Mecklenburg County in that process where they looked at five different jurisdictions and how well or poorly they collaborated among the court and various agencies. And it was really instructive to us as to where, how far we had come and how far we had to go. So that's really what I wanted to say, is that we continue to every day make sure that we check with one another. And that's the thing that happens now that's really the most amazing. When I want to make a change in court, I don't just make a change in court and then see, you know, where the pieces fall. I check with Karen and the folks at the Department of Social Services. I check with the Department of Juvenile Justice. I check with our mental health agencies. I check with our guardian ad litem and run my proposal or what the judges want to do by them first, and make sure that it will work not just for the court, for the judges and our staff, but also work for their agencies. And I feel like they do the same thing for us. And once you establish that environment, it's really a whole different world that you're working in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Judge Trosh. Thank you so much for those comments. This is Mary O'Brien. That's really helpful. Matt, the operator, could you make sure that Judge Trosh was just speaking, that his line can stay open for the rest of the call?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Great. That publication you mentioned, Judge Trosh, maybe I can send people the link to that as a follow-up to this call. And if there's any additional information that people would like, I'd be happy to send it out to people as a follow-up. Great. Why don't we see, Matt, if we have anybody who would like to make a comment or two, and then we'll let Jennifer talk about the resource center. But let's just see if there's anybody else who'd like to comment at this point.
Again, if you have a question or comment, please press the 1 key at this time. We have a question or comment from Tracy Medina from Reno, Nevada.
Hi, I'm actually with the National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, and I just wanted to follow up briefly on that publication that Judge Trosh referenced, just to let you know that it is available through our website, which is ncjfcj.org. So I just wanted to let you know that is available through our website if you are interested.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if you have a question or comment, please press the 1 key.
Let me just say, while people are seeing if they have anything else to say, the folks in North Carolina, can I just ask you to comment on your program improvement plan? I know you have a second round program improvement plan that's been approved. And I think the federal CFSR review team felt it was a pretty strong PIP in terms of the court content. So that's why I had provided a link to it on our website. Do you guys just want to comment a little bit on what ended up in your second round PIP and you know, the you know, how the people from both sides feel about that?
Sure, I'll be glad to. This is Patrick Betancourt with the Division of Social Services. Our program improvement plan that Mary referenced does have a fairly large section on court involvement, and it addresses a number of areas, anywhere from strengthening the training process that we have with our child welfare staff and our local courts, as well as strengthening policy. It covers about 20-some pages of our overall program improvement plan, and a lot of it has to do with some of the areas that the courts were already beginning to work in. And from the child welfare perspective, it can be a little bit daunting to include program improvement plan aspects that of which you don't have direct control over. But we've had a number of meetings with our court improvement project managers and folks with administrative office of the courts to just get assurances and to work through the different aspects of that. Again, when you have a piece of a program improvement plan that the child welfare agency has helped create with the input from others, it feels a little different to give over a portion of that program improvement plan to another agency, but I think it speaks very well to the strong collaboration that we have with AOC that allows them to sort of drive that process. And we've had to have a number of communications with them to just say, check in to see where we are during that process.
Yep, that's great, Patrick. Thank you. That's Mary O'Brien.
Mary, this is Judy from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
For those states that don't yet have counties or even a statewide process, I can tell you that the National Center for State Courts is working on putting together another what's called the National Judicial Leadership Summit, which is something that Minnesota hosted, I think it was about 5 years ago, and there was a second one in 2005, and this will be the third one. But the purpose of that is for the Chief Justice of every state to come to a location, like I said, it was Minnesota, then New York, now Texas, with a multidisciplinary team, a small team of about 5 to 10 people, to do exactly what we're talking about on this conference call, which is find ways to work together to improve our state and our county child protection systems. The last I heard, Children's Summit was still going forward. And for those of you that are in agencies or at the state level, you might want to be in contact with your Chief Justice to learn more about that, because it would be good for agency directors to participate in those meetings.
Excellent, Judy. That's great. Thank you. Okay, I think probably why don't we at this point hear from Jennifer Rennie at the Resource Center, and I think we'll have some time after that for some additional comments if we'd like to do that.
Sure, thanks, Mary. This is Jennifer Rennie, and I'm going to pick up on some of the themes that we've heard from the discussion today and talk a little bit about the training and technical assistance that's available from our Resource Center. I've broken it down into two types, and the first type is consulting, which I'll explain in a minute, and the second is TA on specific topics, and these are legal issues that surface during the CFSR process. Now, typically, these are not new issues. They've been around for years and years, but often the CFSR process provides an opportunity to address the issue. How so? Well, we tell courts that the formality of the PIP process with measures, benchmarks, quarterly reports is a great opportunity to get a court-related issue into the PIP. In other words, it maybe doesn't guarantee that the problem is going to be resolved, but it sure guarantees that it's going to be worked on if it's in the PIP. And we tell agencies and folks that are responsible for drafting PIPs that the more creative the state can be to develop strategies to tackle a particular issue, the better chance that it's going to lead to improved outcomes. I love that there are so many state child welfare agency folks on the call today, because I think that oftentimes when states agencies think about the role of the courts, and especially in terms of the PIP and the CFSR process, that the emphasis is on the permanency outcomes and the case review system. But we have got written materials, and we also do a lot of TA on encouraging states to think more broadly about legal dimensions in all aspects of the CFSR. For example, I'm going to give you a couple quick examples. One, under safety, we've co-authored a publication with our partners at the Resource Center for Child Protective Services. And what it is it's a guide for judges on what goes into safety decision making. So judges are, on the whole, not well trained on what kinds of factors should be considered when making a removal decision or a reunification decision. So this guide targeted towards judges, and we anticipate that it will also be used by attorneys in terms of prepping their cases, informs the courts in terms of not just the information that the agency needs to provide, but the process by which the agency goes about making a decision. Well-being is another area where we do a ton of TA. We've actually got one attorney on staff, and all she does is education work. So she works on training attorneys and other folks on improving the educational outcomes for children. So another creative approach that you might want to integrate into the PIP is to think about, for example, drafting a new GAL contract where the GALs are required to attend IEPs and get training on how to meet the special education needs of children. And then my final example is, if you think about the systemic factors and the one on foster parent recruitment and retention, on its face it seems like a purely agency function, I mean recruiting and retaining foster parents. But there is a legal dimension, a judicial dimension to that as well, where we tell courts that they can have a huge impact on the retention of foster care if they implement the law, which is ensuring that the foster parents receive notice and ensuring that the foster parents have a right to be heard at the hearings. Why do I say this? Well, the social science data indicate that one of the main reasons that foster parents leave the system is frustration with the process, with the agency and with the court process. So, you know, the court can certainly take steps to empower the foster parents' participation. So those are some examples of TA on specific topics. The other category that I wanted to talk about, hello? Sorry, I'm hearing feedback, is in the area of consulting. And this is where most of our TNTA is designed on a case-by-case basis. We do offer some formal training on the topic, and I'm talking about specifically what we've been talking about on this call with regard to involving the courts in the CFSR process. So we've got some formal training. We actually have a TA module that's designed to take place over a whole day, but we found that states typically don't have a whole day to devote to that subject. And so what we do is we take bits and pieces of it, and we've got a lot of it in written form. It's about how and why to engage the courts in the CFSR process, and it also talks about what we mean by systemic change. I think it's important for the child welfare folks on the call, the agency folks, to understand two things about CIPs. One is that each of the CIPs has a strategic plan for their basic grant, their training grant, and their data grant. So they already have outlined specific activities, benchmarks, timetables, and goals. And if you look, it's amazing to me how many states still don't share that information, where the agencies don't have a copy of the CIP strategic plans to inform the PIP development. The second important thing to know is that recent legislation requires that the CIPs demonstrate ongoing, meaningful collaboration with the agencies, which is exactly what we're talking about. A couple of points about outlining the court's possible involvement during each stage of the CFSR process. First of all, there's advanced planning. We offer TA by sending out, we've got two consultant judges that are visiting each state, and they meet with the Chief Justice, the State Agency Administrator, and the presiding judge of the largest state court, and others regarding the CFSR. And these are fairly labor-intensive visits and meetings, we've got conference calls leading up to the meetings where folks from the state will identify the barriers and inform the judges in terms of what to anticipate. And then we have follow-up calls. And the follow-up calls are really great because after the judges make their visits, they write a report and they identify areas of TA where we can follow up to assist the state. Also, in terms of advanced planning, a couple of folks mentioned MOAs or MOUs, Memorandum of Understanding, outlining cooperation during all stages of the CFSR. If you look at the statewide assessment, some of the pointers, and I think it was Judy that made some of these points, is that, that we provide TA on is for the court and other legal representatives to review the narrative description and to review parts of the statewide assessment and to actually draft portions of the statewide assessment. I hear from agencies that they don't like to, and I think someone said something to this effect earlier, that they don't like to relinquish control of the statewide assessment to the courts, but it really could be helpful for the courts to take pieces of that and certainly do it in partnership with the agency and go back and forth with the drafting and the editing process. But I really encourage folks, and we provide TA on that issue of legal system involvement in the statewide assessment. In terms of the on-site review, the courts can be invaluable in terms of identifying not only stakeholders for the interviews, but also folks to participate on the team, to be on the CFSR teams themselves. And then the PIP implementation, we always say that if you're involving the courts at the point at which the PIP is either being developed or implemented, it's too late. And this underscores a point that was made over and over again during the call about the importance of relationships. You've really got to start the relationship building early on and have that carry through to the PIP development phase. I do want to say, talking quickly, because I know we only have 5 minutes before we turn into pumpkins, Mary has mentioned several times the How to Work with Your Courts publication. It's free. I don't know if she said that. And we shipped, I think it was 1,800 copies to the clearinghouse, so they've got plenty of copies. If you want to order that publication for yourself and your jurisdiction, feel free to order multiple copies, and the Information Gateway has graciously agreed to ship those out for free. The second publication, which has not been mentioned, is called Foundations for Success, Strengthening Your Agency Attorney Office. If I had another 10 minutes or 10 hours, I would talk about our work in terms of improving legal representation for parties. And one of the key components of that is the Agency Attorney Office. And so this publication is directed towards child welfare administrators, and it talks about practice standards for agency attorneys, hiring and retaining, performance evaluation, disagreements between the caseworker and the agency attorneys and recommendations for resolving those disagreements, caseload standards, staffing, et cetera. And that publication, Foundations for Success, is also available free at the Information Gateway. Mary, I do want to leave. I have more to say, but I do want to leave a few minutes for questions. If there are no questions, I'll continue, but I think we should open up the lines.
Super. That's great. Matt, why don't you just give people a reminder again about how to do that?
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press the 1 key at this time. I'm currently showing no further questions.
Timothy, before I continue, was there anything, I realize I usurped most of the time here, was there anything that you wanted to jump in and add?
Just very briefly. Jennifer, I think it's important for the child welfare agency and the CIPs to work together as a team and to project themselves as a team to the rest of the stakeholders. If you look at Appendix J in the CFSR materials, you'll see that there's a strong collaboration that's emphasized there. And the agency and the court meeting together, forming sort of a united front, if you will, can really help in organizing all the rest of the stakeholders who are also essential to the CFSR process. So that would be the one point that I'd want to make is to become a teammate with the court, working together, designing agendas together for meetings and things like that.
Thank you, Timothy. and underscores the point that let's remember that the CFSR is not measuring the performance of the child welfare agency. It's measuring the performance of the state, and the courts are very much a part of that. It was certainly true in the first round. I will say that in the second round, the focus on the court system has really intensified, and the Children's Bureau has devoted a lot more resources towards improving that. And I tell folks in the Child Welfare Agency that in this day of limited resources, budget cuts, decreasing availability of services, that successfully integrating the courts can have a huge impact on outcomes, and it really doesn't cost much. It's a big bang for the buck. So with limited resources on the part of the state, successfully involving the courts can really move those numbers and improve those outcomes.
This is Mary O'Brien. Let me just say briefly that Minnesota has those Children's Justice Initiative teams, and lots of places around the country have local collaborative teams. Maybe I can ask the Judge Trosh in North Carolina to just comment on this. I know a lot of the model courts have developed local collaborative teams, and those have come out of a lot of other sort of judicial-led initiatives. And I think one of the things that's exciting about Minnesota is they've been able to connect those local teams with the improvement process, both in the CIP and also on the CFSR side. So with the data coming out of the CFSR, when they've identified areas of need, they brought that data to those teams and asked them, you know, to work on them as part of their efforts to work overall on improvements in the system. So I just wanted to flag that because lots of states around the country have those local some kind of local teams, and I think it's an opportunity for child welfare agencies to ask what kind of collaborative work is going on the judicial side, and what can we work with, you know, to help us in this, our efforts to move the whole system forward.
I would agree with that. I think that in North Carolina we are just really expanding our partnership between CIP and the child welfare agencies or the local teams across the state. So previously we had several strong areas where there was some strong collaboration and other areas of the state where there was less collaboration. There's a real push now by our court improvement project to make sure that there are teams set up in each of our family court districts across the state to accomplish the type of collaboration that we've all been talking about. In addition, we try to pull our Chief Justice, Justice Parker, into all of this by focusing on one specific issue. And we've got a meeting coming up with her where we're going to focus on the overrepresentation of minority children in the child welfare system. And we asked her to participate in that meeting, and she's really has shown a commitment to dealing with that issue. And I think that'll either bring further benefits to our collaboration as we move from sort of a local system to what it sounds like you have in Minnesota, a more organized statewide system of collaboration. Hello?
Excellent. Great. Matt, do we have any other open line questions?
Again, if you have a question, please press the 1 key at this time.
We are coming to the end of our time, so I'm going to just do a few closing remarks here. If anybody else wants to add anything, that's fine. I would encourage everyone on the line, I hope this has been helpful. If you have challenges or issues around agency court collaboration, you know, contact the Resource Center for Legal and Judicial Issues or Organizational Improvement, or the Resource Centers are, you know, free resources that are here to help you. Follow up on any of the resources that we mentioned as well. I want to tell everyone that we have an evaluation form for this teleconference. You'll get an email today with the link to that. It was also in the initial email you got. And we do appreciate your feedback. If you want to fill that out and just give us any feedback on this call, things that could be improved or things that you'd be interested in hearing about in the future, we always take those into account. So we'd appreciate that feedback. I should take a moment to thank everyone for being with us, for Jennifer Rennie and Timothy Travis and all the folks from Minnesota and North Carolina. Thank you so much for, you know, sharing your experience and your observations with us. We have made a recording of this call, and it will be available as an audio file on the Organizational Improvement website. So if anybody else would you think might benefit from hearing it, you can listen to it in the future that way. Jennifer, did you want to say anything else?
No, just to reiterate the thanks at the beginning of the call, Mary. Terrific job.
Great, and thank you, everyone, for all the presenters for joining us. Thank you so much, and thank you, everyone, for listening in. We'll hope to hear from you again on one of our teleconferences in the future, and I think we do need to bring it to an end now.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude today's program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.